Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kedushin Daf Mem Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 16 lines from the top of Daf Mem Beis. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we have on the side in the margin a note called the Mivneth, a structural note. A double underline is featured, and if you skim ahead in the Gemara itself, you will notice that these lines appear. You'll notice that it highlights the name Rav Gidol Amarav, and there's a numbering scheme that appears to the on the right-hand side of the Gemara text. What do these represent? So our note says, these are Gimel Nisyonos, three attempts, Ma Lomad Rav Gidol Amarav Mea Posuk V'nosi echod, nosi echod mimate. The Gemara will present this particular pasuk in the context of the pasuk itself appears in the Torah in the context of the division of the land of Israel amongst the tribes upon their entrance to the land. The inverted house shape that you see represents dechios, rejections of what had been suggested till that point. Now, the Gemara. This Gemara, we have to emphasize, is coming on the heels of yesterday, of our previous shiur's preoccupation with the topic of shlichus. We established four sources for shlichus in four different areas of halacha regarding kiddushin, gerushin, hafroshas trumas, and korbonos. And in all of those cases, we come to the conclusion that we say shlucho shel adam kamoso, the agent who carries out his agency, his appointment as an agent, is functioning in the place of the original sender. The Gemara. V'elohon diomar av gidol amarav, minayin shlucho shalom kamosoi. Rav Gidol Amarav says, where do we know that a person's agent is like himself? Shenemar v'nosi echod, nosi echod mimate. From that posuk, we learn that the agent of an individual is like the person himself. Teipuk le shlichus mehocha. Why not learn shlichus from one of the previous sources that we have cited? The Gemara rejects this. V'tisbara. What we just said itself needs explanation. Deha shlichusu is the division of the land through the heads of the tribes, as the pasuk said, a function of agency. Who received portions in the land? Well, the people of Israel. Included in the amongst the people of Israel were minors that received a portion of land. V'ha ketanim la v'nei shlichusinu. Minors who were participant in that event, in that episode of division of land, are not capable, they're not qualified to appoint an agent. Rashi. Let's look at Rashi together, and we'll say the upper third of the Rashi column. V'ho havu nami ktanim b'nochale horetz, amongst the inheritors of the land. V'chi hazoichim lohem b'turas shluchim bo. Could you possibly say that those who granted parcels of land to these miners were acting as their agents, as the agents of the miners? V'halo ein shlichus l'katan. A minor doesn't have the power to appoint an agent. Agabi vishalach or vishulcha. These are words that were darshaned in the topic of divorce, Vishilcha Ish Ksiv, in the amongst the words that were darshaned, the word, the root of the word Vishalach and Vishilcha were darshaned, and there the word Ish appears. And you find Ki Yikach Ish also in the context of Kiddushin, of marriage. Umino Yalfinon, the Ein HaKotan Oisishliach. From the word Ish, Ish indicates an adult. From this we learn that a minor cannot appoint an agent. We continue in the Gemara. Elo Kiha Derovo Baravuna. What are we about to do in the Gemara? The Pasuk of Nasi Echad is in fact not designed, is not here to tell us about Shlichus. It's here to tell us about something else, a different halachic principle. So this is why we've numbered this as number two. The second attempt to find what does Rav Gidl Amar Rav derive from the Pasuk of V'Nasi Echad. So we continue. Ela kiha de Rava bar Ravuna, rather in accordance with Rava's teaching, the Amar Rava Ravuna, Amar Rav Gidl Amar Rav. Notice we've double underlined Rav Gidl Amar Rav again. Minayin shezochin laadam shelo befonav. From where do we know that when you are acting on behalf of someone to benefit someone, you can, we'll say, receive something on behalf of someone else if it's for his benefit? That's the concept of Zochin L'Adam. If you will, Mr. B receives from Mr. A something on behalf of Mr. C. Where do we know that that is effective, that when Mr. B receives it, that clinches the deal and it becomes the possession of Mr. C? So from where do we know that? Shenemar v'nosi echad, nosi echad, from that pasuk. But once again, the Gemara raises an objection. V'tisbara, zechus he, the division of the land, is it in fact something we can term as beneficial? Ha chovo nami ika. There is also an element of, we'll say, of deprivation or loss, believe it or not, in the event or on the occasion of that, of the division of the land. How is there loss? How is there a sense of deprivation? De ika de nicho le bahar velo nicho le bebika. Ika de nicho le bebika velo nicho le bahar. Portions of land that were received were, of course, dependent on geographical area. There are some areas in a mountainous part of Israel. Some lands were in the low-lying areas of the land. People who received land in a mountainous area might have, in fact, preferred receiving something in the big on the low-lying area, and vice versa. So receiving a portion of land that's not to your liking cannot be termed a zchus, something of benefit to you. So what are we to learn from v'nosi echad nosi echad? V'yela k'derava baravuna. D'yama rava baravuna amrav gidol amrav. Minayin liyasoimim shibo lachlik b'nichsi avihen. From where do we know that orphans are, generally speaking, a reference to minors, and they're coming to receive portions from their father's estate. Shebeisin ma'amidim lem apotropos, that the court appoints an executor to oversee the division of the estate. And we skip the bracketed section for a moment. Lachuv almanas lischois, that means, and this, by skipping the brackets, we're reading the final din of Rav Gidl Amar Rav. Within the brackets, there's a presentation that's not accurate. So the question is, from where do we know that Beis Din can appoint an apotropos, where even if the result is detrimental, is lachuv, but the apotropos, his intention was to function for each one's maximum benefit. And Rav Huna is telling us that as long as the apotropos, the executor, was working for the purpose of benefiting the Yisayimim, even if the result is not of maximum benefit, the decision made by the court-appointed apotropos is binding. From where do we know that? Talmud Lomar v'nosi echod nosi echod mimata tikochu. From that pasuk. Now, we skipped the bracketed section, so let's go over that again with the brackets. Rav Gidol Marav tells us, from where do we know that Yisoyimim that come to divide from their father's estate, based in Ma'amidim Lem Apotrobus, Lachuv v'lizkos. Lachuv is to cause loss, lizkos, and to cause benefit. What do you mean, Lachuv, Amai? What do you need a court-appointed apotropos in order to cause loss for? Rashi says, "Lachuv amai ipshita lon shiyavo lechavosam ma lonu lamid apotropos lekach." If it's so clear that in the court arrangement where Yisoyimim appear, they're going to end up losing. Why do you need to appoint an apotropos for that purpose? So that's not really what is described, but rather lachuv almanas lizkos, as we explained, and we're going to go over this again, but this time with the Rashi. The Rashi that we're looking at is a more than halfway down. Elo kidarova klomar lo zchus shelo b'fon of greitzah iko l'mashma mino ligadolim. The pasuk nosi echad is not coming to tell us the halacha of benefiting someone not in his presence. We call it zochin la'adam shelo b'fonav, to act on behalf of someone else if it's beneficial to him for adults. That's not what the pasuk is telling me. Ela la'roye nami, the pasuk is telling me additionally, deliktanim, when it comes to acting on behalf of minors, afilu chayva habo machmas chus, even a loss that comes as a result of an attempt to benefit, rashoyin bezin lasus lehen, bezin has the power to do for them, to rule thusly, ki hocha, like the case of the division of the land of Israel. In the case of the division of the land, the heads of the tribes were coming to receive on behalf of the members of the nation of Israel portions of land. Even though sometimes a portion that would be apportioned was not to the receiver's liking. There are those that are not satisfied with the portion they receive. Even so, there was no reversal. We see that that's what happened at the division of the land. So we apply that to the case of the court appointing an executor to apportion an estate amongst the different heirs. And we continue in the Rashi, skipping to the next Dibur HaMasel of Elo Lachuv Almanas Lizkos. Rashi says, Anu Na'amidoi Lodunu La'arib Shvilam, will set up an executor to adjudicate and offer claims for his clients, the minors, the heirs, Lizakoisam Lanosam, for their benefit. And if they end up becoming obligated or losing out, what is done is done. It's binding. And that we learn from the apportionment of the land, which was done by the Nisim, the different heads of the tribes. Ultimately, their intent was to benefit everyone in Klal Yisrael. And as we said, sometimes, though, people would receive portions that were not to their liking, and nevertheless, the division was binding. So from this, Rav Gidol Amar Rav sees his source for the law, for his ruling of the Yesoimim that came to divide B'nichsei Avim, that Beis Din appoints, the court appoints an executor. I would say that the parallel on a superficial level is the executors working on behalf of the Yesoimim were like the Nesiim, the heads of the tribes, working on behalf of the members of Klal Yisrael. We continue with a new topic on the side. We have a Nosei, a topic heading, which reads, Ma Koyach Bezin Yofet. In and of itself, that is, it's a catchy phrase, but it appears a bit abstract. The catchy phrase is, what, you know, if you reverse the rulings of the court, so where do court rulings have any strength? If they're subject to reversal, so or protest, what value is there in the court ruling? We'll have to see what we're really referring to simply by going through the Gemara. But it's a concept that once you're familiar with the various sugyas and shas where this appears, this is a very meaningful phrase, Ma koyach bezin yofet. Omar Rav Nachman Omar Shmuel. We're noting Shmuel number one. A few lines later, you'll see Rav Nachman noted as number two. Here, Shmuel is being quoted by Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman is quoting Shmuel. In number two, Rav Nachman says something he disagrees, but he's saying there's something didei, meaning on his own. So here, Rav Nachman quotes Shmuel saying Yisoimim shebo lachloik b'nichsei avihem. The Vilna Gaon, the Gra, writes, it quotes the Rambam, who says that here we're describing a case of an estate that's being divided amongst adult heirs and minor heirs. And the adults want to proceed with the division of the estate. So from where do Yisoimim, they come to divide their father's estate. Beis Din Ma'amidim Lohem Apotropos. The Beis Din sets up an executor who represents the Ketanim, as the Gra indicates. Uburim lehem chelik yofet, and a proper portion, a share in the estate is chosen for them, for the minors. The migdilu yecholim linchois, and if they reach adulthood, when they mature, they can protest. For Rav Nachman Didei Omar, im higdilu einom yecholim limchois. When they reach adulthood, they cannot protest. Deim Kain, if you're going to say they could protest, ma koyach bezin yofet, what's the value of the court appointment of the executor in the first place? So Rav Nachman represents an opinion that's very concerned with preserving the strength of the court. The Gemara asks a question that takes us to the bottom line, as you can see, our marking indicates. Umi is leilu Rav Nachman im kein ma koyach bezin yofet? Is it really so that Rav Nachman is concerned with preserving the strength of the court? The Hotanan, we have a Tanaic source. There are two opinions in the source. We want to note the first of the two opinions. And why do we want to note the first of the two opinions? Because Rav Nachman, on the bottom line of the Gemara, is going to rule like this first of the two opinions. What does it say here? Shum hadayonim. Shum, from the word shuma, or based on the word shuma, is a word meaning an evaluation, an assessment made by the dayonim, by the judges. Shum hadayonim. Let's say there was some property that needed to be evaluated. A borrower of money had no cash to pay back a loan, and he had land, he had property. The lender wants to seize upon that property, and the borrower is not around, so the lender needs, we'll say, the court intervention in order for him to be able to seize upon that property. You can have a situation where the borrower is a recalcitrant individual, is uncooperative, and the court has to intervene. The court then will assess an amount of property corresponding to the value of the loan, the amount of the loan. That's Shulma Deonim. The court evaluates property. And however, Shepichas Ushtuso Hosir Ushtus, there was an inaccuracy in the court evaluation. They undervalued it by a sixth or overvalued it by a shtus means a sixth. Michron Botel, the sale of that land, in order to pay the lender, the court sale is void. Look, they made a mistake. Someone got ripped off, either the buyer or the seller being the borrower of the money. The deal is off. Rav Shulam Leoloimer Michron Kayam, their sale remains binding. In Cain, if you're going to cancel the sale, Makoyach Bezin Yofe, so what strength is there to a court ruling or a court evaluation? The Omar Avuna Barchinino, Omar Rav Nachman, Halacha Kedivrei Chachamim. Rav Nachman rules like the Chachamim. And in ruling like the Chachamim, there doesn't seem to be a concern for the preservation of the strength of Bezin. That's Rav Shimon Leo's concern, not the Tanakama. And Rav Nachman, following the Tanakama, shows us that Rav Nachman, is not so concerned with the court rulings. So then why before dealing with the Yisoimim, when they become of age, they can protest what the court-appointed apotropos had decided was their portion? Lo kashya. There's no difficulty here. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Ha de ta'u, ha de lo ta'u. Where a mistake was made, as we saw in the source regarding the court assessment or inaccurate assessment, a mistake is a mistake. It can be canceled. By canceling the mistake, you're not declaring some type of weakness in court strength as far as the Tanakhama is concerned. Shulman Bill disagrees, but the mistake makes it obvious that the reversal is because of the mistake, not because of some, let's say, a weakness to court rulings. Ha de lo to, in the case of the division of the land, there was no mistake per se. So whatever the court appointed executor divided out to each one of the heirs, that sticks. The Gemara asks, "E delo to ma yecholim limchos?" If there was no mistake, then what would Shmuel mean when he says, "Well, when they become adults, they can protest." Protest what? There's nothing to protest. The Gemara answers, "There is what to protest." Yecholim limchos beruchos. Directions or land. Some land is located in the north, some is located in the south, and someone that may have, let us say, one of the heirs might have had a piece of land on his own already, and he would want a portion of the estate that bordered on his pre-existing land, his pre-owned land. Rashi on the top line, Baruchos, mi shenofa lo chelek badorom, someone who received a portion of the estate by virtue of the executor's division, received a portion of land in the south, Omer, so he could say, Noach li betzofan, I would have preferred a portion of the state in the north. Why? Shoyselo shom sade smuchala shenofla lo mimo. He already had a piece of land that he inherited from his mother. So that would be, let's say, a grounds for at least raising the possibility of protest. But it's not dealing with a mistake. We continue by looking at the side of the Gemara under our nosei, our topic heading, which reads, Ho'achin shechoku harei hein kilukuchos. The division of an estate amongst brothers who divide their father's estate, is viewed in legal terms like purchasers. What what halachic ramification does that have? What legal ramification is there in classifying heirs dividing an estate as lekuchas, as purchasers? So we'll continue in the Gemara where this is enumerated. Pochos mishtus nikne mekach. In a sale where the amount paid for an item is, we'll say, he's overpaying or underpaying, but the margin of, we'll say, of error, of discrepancy, is less than a sixth of the going rate for that particular item. So, under circumstances like that, where the discrepancy, he overpaid a seventh of the value, a tenth of the value, the nikne mekach means the transaction, the deal sticks. There's no reversal, and there's no compensation either. Yeser al shtus botel mekach. If the discrepancy is more than a sixth, you pay 20% more for the item than the going rate. Botel mekach, the deal is off. You give back the item to the one that sold it to you, and he gives you back your money. Shtus, if it's exactly a sixth off, kana umachsirayna, the transaction sticks. However, there's a refund of the ona. The ona is the discrepancy, or the overcharge, or the undercharge, whatever. So too, we're viewing people that divide their father's estate. That should be, we're striving to have an equal value in the division, and hence this standard of error will apply to the standard error determining whether a sale stands will apply to the case of the division of an estate. On the side of the Gemara, as we encounter now a triangle, we have under the Mivneh, Hey Dinim, five laws. We've note Gimel Shel Rav Nachman and Shnei Mishnayos, the three of Rav Nachman and two Tanaic sources. She Rava Masbiram. You'll see Rava explaining them. You'll see the phrase. It's a repeating phrase in the Gemara. Lo Amoron Ella. In other words, whatever was said was stated under these particular circumstances, so that the laws will be, say, qualified. So we have a list of laws, and following each one, you'll see the expression Lo Amoron Ella, which in our markings we attempt to highlight with a dashed underline. All that, I'd say that marking scheme you'll see appears with regard to the first three halachas. The Gemara. Omar Rava, Ha de Amoran, or Ha de Amris, is a different girsa, Pochos Mishtus Nikne Mekach, that if the discrepancy is one of less than a sixth, the deal stands, the sale remains a binding sale, Lo Amoranella de Lo Shavya Shaliach. That's provided that the one conducting the sale was not an agent on behalf of someone else. Avol Shavya Shaliach, if Mr. A, let us say, appointed an agent to buy something on his behalf, and the agent paid a seventh more, 10% more than the value of the item, Mr. A, who sent the agent, can say, Omar, l'skuni shadartich v'lo lavisi. I sent you l'skuni for my benefit, not for my detriment. So any discrepancy, any overpayment in that particular example, even if it's less than a sixth more, is grounds for reversal. Because when you appoint a shaliach, you have the right to expect precision. Number two, v'ha the amris yeser mishtus botel mekach, and that which you said. Again, you notice that we're referring to the teachings of Rav Nachman. So this was the second teaching of Nachman, that yeser mishtus botel mekach, that a payment of more, a discrepancy of more than a sixth is grounds for calling off the deal. Lo amorn elo de lo omar nifliginon bishuma de beidina. That's true, only if there wasn't a request to have the division. We're applying the laws of sales to the case of a division of the division of an estate. So in the situation of the division of the estate, so there was no request for an assessment on the part of the court, a court based assessment. Aval Omar Nifloig Bishuma de Beidina, if the division of the estate was based on a court assessment, and there was a discrepancy of more than a sixth, Michron Kayam, the deal stands. And we're going to quote the same source as we saw before, but we're going to emphasize not the Tanakama, but in this case, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Disnan, Shuma Dayonim Shepichas Rishtus Ohosi Rishtus Michron Botel, an assessment made by the judges where there's a discrepancy of a sixth, either too much, too little. The Tanakhama says the deal is off. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer Michron Kayam. And here we're focusing on Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, who says that even though there was this discrepancy by the court, what they had assessed, what they ruled, stands. Let's look at Rashi together on the fourth line from the top. Hoch Yasinon, this is the girsa to accept which we have. V'ha'ad amoron yeser al shtus botel mekach lo amoron el delo omar niflug b'shuma de beidina. Ha'ad amar yeser al shtus botel chaluka legamri, that which Rav Nachman said, that if there was a discrepancy of more than a sixth, the entire division is void. Lo amoron elo shelo hisnu mitchilu yeshuma sanechosim b'shloisha shein beizdin. That's only if they did not declare at the outset that there should be an assessment of the properties by three individuals. That constitutes a court. If the family with the executor accepted on themselves a division based on a court evaluation, even if the discrepancy ends up to be more than a sixth, the division stands. The Kaimalog Shimon Liel Dermer Michron Kayam Saksubis, we rule like Rav Shimon Liel, as is featured in Maseches Ksubis Perak Amon and Nizainis. Velos Svirale LaRava, Rava himself does not agree. Hal Diyama Rav Nachman Liel Aloche Divri Chachomim. So we have something that's a bit, we'll say, a little ironic over here, and that is that Rava is coming to qualify the various teachings of Rav Nachman on this particular point. He's not only qualifying his teaching, he also disagrees, he has a fundamental disagreement with Rav Nachman regarding the ruling in this source of Shuma Dayanim, where Rava paskins, he rules like Rav Shimon Leo. Let's continue in the Gemara. The third point of Rav Nachman, which said if the discrepancy is exactly a sixth, so the deal stands and there a refund of the difference is made, the sixth, that is, lo amoron elo b'metatali. That halacha applies to portables. Avol b'mekarkeli, when it comes to land, land division, land purchases, ein oino lekarkos. The concept of overcharging, undercharging, which is encapsulated by the word oino, that halacha does not apply to land. The reason for this, or the basis for this, is a pasuk in the Torah. Rashi quotes it, where the Torah says, "Okona miyara misecha al tonu." If a transaction takes place, and the pasuk used the term kono miyada misab, what does it mean to acquire something from the hand of your friend? That's a reference to something that's transferred hand to hand, meaning something that's portable. So in that context, the Torah warns Al Tonu, do not rip off. But when you're dealing with land, so that's not what the Pasuk had in mind. Now, does that mean that in land transactions and land divisions you can rip off as much as you like? So the Gemara goes on to say, when it comes to this, we'll say this non-restriction of discrepancies in land deals, that's only when the division is was made through a Iluya means looking at the various parcels of land's value, as opposed to a strict land division using a measuring device. Avopolu b'mashchosa, mashchosa literally is a rope, a pre-measured rope, we could say a tape measure. If the land was divided like that, then if there is a discrepancy, we do not say that the land division sticks. If Kidirabo, based on Rabo's teaching, Dioma Rabo, Koldover Shebamidav Shemishkov Sheminyan, all transactions that involve midah, size, mishkol, weight, minyan, countings, afilu pochus michteo no, even if the discrepancy is less than a sixth, nami choser, the deal is reversed. We look at Rashi, a few lines up from here, be'iluya, shelo cholkum bechevel, the parcel of land, let's say in the case of a division of a father's estate, was not divided with a chevel, with a rope, the measuring device. Litoil kol echod b'ro b'yofe, elo he'erlum b'domim, v'not al zeh b'ro k'fidomim, v'zeh b'yofe k'fidomim. There was, as part of the estate, there were different qualities of land. Poor quality land was divided to one in terms of its value relative to the rich land. So, very simply stated, if the poor land was half the value of the rich land, so the brother, if there were two boys receiving property, so the brother that receives the poor land would receive twice the quantity of poor land as the quantity received by the one who took the rich land to, we'll say, to compensate for its lesser value. In a division like that, where it's divided in accordance with assessment of land properties without using a measuring device, so then we said, Eino ino le karkois, even if it turns out that there is a mistake in value in terms of the division sticks, it remains as is. But when it comes to discrepancies based on measuring or weighing things, you bought 2 pounds of oranges, and it turns out that the scale was inaccurate, and what the scale read as 2 pounds was really 1.9 pounds. The 1/10 of a pound is a minor discrepancy. It's less than a sixth, but nevertheless, that's grounds for reversing the deal. Rashi adds a little explanation to this. He says a tois in midah is a tois, it's a mistake, and when a person buys something based on weight or measure, he does not have the mindset that factors in that possibility. He is thinking only in terms of exact value for measure. We continue in the Gemara. V'ha disnan ha-shalechas ha-be'era b'yad chere shayt v'kotten. What the definition of Be'era is in fact a Machlokes, Reish Lakish and Reb Yochanan in Maseches Bava Kama. For our purposes, we'll refer to it as something that's fire related, whether it be coals or a torch. That, I said, is a Machlokes. So one who sends a Be'era in the hands of a Cheresh, a deaf mute, a Shoit, an imbecile, a cotton, or a minor, people that have no no responsibility. They're inept individuals. And yet I gave to them a Be'era, and damage resulted. Potter midine odem v'chai bedine shamayim. I'm held accountable in heaven, but as a result of damage that results, the earthly courts cannot require me to compensate. That's poter midine adam, exempt from man's rulings, but yet held accountable in heaven for acting irresponsibly. Shilach biat pikeach, if I handed the be'era to a qualified individual, to a person of sound mind, pikeach chayav. So the one to whom I gave the torch or the coals, he is responsible. He's not viewed as my agent, where his actions would reflect back upon me who gave him the torch or gave him the coals. We say you received the be'era. You who received it, what did you go and burn down the guy's haystack for? The Gemara asks, V'amai. Why do we say that the pikeach, the receiver who was of sound mind, is he himself is responsible, has to compensate? Neimar shlucho shel olam kamoso. Why don't we say that the agent working on behalf of an original party, his agency reflects back on the original party, and the original party should be held accountable? Shaini Hosam. In that case, regarding the Be'era, we're not going to say Shlucho Shalom Kamoso, the Ein Shliach Lidvar Avera. There is no agency when it comes to an act of sinfulness. Tiamrinon, the logic being Divrei Harav, the Divrei Talmud. Divrei Harav, the words of the Master. In this case, the Master is the Almighty, who commanded not to sin, not to create damage. The Divrei Talmud, the person, let's say, the owner of the torch. Divrei Mishomim, who do you listen to? A Pikeach is a man of sound mind. He received the torch. He knows God says, do not do damage. The one who gave him the torch, hey, gave it to him, said, go and burn down the neighbor's garage. Who do you listen to? You listen to, of course, God's word. And if you didn't do so, you, the one who received it, we'll call him the Shaliach, he is Chayav, not the one who gave him the torch. The Rashi says, just a couple lines up from here, Ein Shliach Choshuv Shaliach Lidvar Avera Shiyischayev Sholcho. When you're dealing with a Dvar Avera, when you're dealing with a matter of sin or damage, we don't say that the agent is functioning as an agent. An agent who does function as an agent, his actions reflect back upon the one that sent him. And in such a case, the one that sent him would be obligated to compensate, but we don't say that. Elo hare hu ka'oise me'elov. That agent is viewed as if he did it on his own. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, Hal d'amrinon ein shliach l'dvar avera. That which we say, ein shliach l'dvar avera, mishum dehave, and this is the first of two approaches, that's why you see a number one on the side, mishum dehave shnei ksuvim aboyim ke'echod v'chol shnei ksuvim aboyim ke'echod ein melamdin. This idea of ein shliach l'dvar avera as a principle that we apply across the boards is because there happen to be two cases in the Torah where we see shliach l'dvar avera. where we see an agent doing something that's of a, we'll say, a sinful nature, and his action actually reflects back on the one that sent him, and the one that sent him is held accountable. But because that appears twice, and not just once, we say it applies only in those two examples, and not to the rest of the Torah. This is what we mean when we say Shnei Ksuvim Haboyim Kechot, two verses, two topics that teach me the same thing. If you were to think that that something is to be a precedent setter, something to be a source of halacha, there would be no necessity in stating it twice. You would say it once and say, I will use that as my model. If the Torah says the same thing twice, the intent is only here would this apply, but nowhere else. So there are, in fact, two examples of shliach l'dvar avera, and as a result of that, we say, in general, ein shliach l'dvar avera. You might be wondering already, well, what are the two examples? Ah, we'll wait for the Gemara for that. There is a number two in our no-say note, and it reads, l'man d'omar melamdin, according to we'll say an opposing opinion that says, even if you have two Shnei Ksuvim Boim Gechod, they nevertheless are able to serve as a precedent. So then, why would we say Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera? I have two examples of Shliach L'Dvar Avera, and let that serve as a precedent across the boards. So we'll tell you, Yesh Gzeres HaKosuv B'Shchut Echutz. There is a scriptural ruling in the context of the sin of Shchut Echutz. She'ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. Shchut Echutz is the Torah prohibition of slaughtering sacrifices outside the Beis Hamikdash, outside the Holy Temple. We'll wait for the Gemara to present to us that particular scriptural ruling, but nevertheless, either way, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera, that's an accepted principle. What is the basis for saying that? So we have two approaches. One is that's an outgrowth of Shnei Ksuvim Haboyim Gechot, two examples where we see Shliach L'Dvar Avera, and because they're two examples, we say only there would there be Shliach L'Dvar Avera, but everywhere else not. Or a special Gzeres HaKosuv that tells us Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. So now we continue in the Gemara. V'ha disnan, the topic has to do with hektish. Hektish is the realm of things that are sanctified, monies that are dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, and the misuse of such funds results, misuse for, we'll say, for personal benefit, in general, misuse of sanctified funds results in a sin called Me'ilah. Me'ilah requires the offender to pay back the Beis HaMikdash, and it would also involve bringing an Osham Me'ilah, a special sacrifice. So we have a source that says, Shliach Shalo Oso Shlichuso. An agent who didn't fulfill his agency in the expenditure of holy funds for something mundane. Well, if he didn't do what he was asked to do, so the agent is the sinner, Mo'al. Also Shlichuso, Balabayas Mo'al. If he did what he was asked to do and used holy funds for a mundane purpose, so the one that sent him is in violation. Rashi gives us a concrete example of that. Let's look at Rashi together. Shliach shelo osu shlichuso. Gabi hekdish koi. This source is in the context of hekdish. Shohoyu etzlo mois hekdish. A person had in his possession monies, cash that he had sanctified. V'ta'a. Kosovur shehen shelchulin. And the owner thought that the money sitting on his windowsill was chulin and not sanctified funds. He took the money from his windowsill, thinking that they're common personal funds, gave them to an agent, to a friend of his, and said, Likach bohen choluk. Buy for me an article of clothing called a choluk. And what did the agent do? He took the money, v'kona bohem talis. He bought a different article of clothing. So the shliach didn't do what he was asked to do. Shliach mo'al, v'lo ha-shocho. Shebedover zeh eino shlucho. With regard to the purchase of a talis, he's not an agent for the purchase of a talis. So the sinner in this case is the agent, the one who bought the incorrect item. Aval im, Rashi goes on, aval im also shlichuso balabayas moal umevi korban meila. If the agent bought what he was requested to buy, and the example Rashi gave was a chaluk, then the original the balabayas, the original owner, he has to bring the korban meila, the sacrifice we referred to earlier, because of this sin of the misuse of sanctified funds. Now, did he go to the store and buy the choluk? No, an agent did. And yet we say, and we see from here, that yesh shliach l'dvar avera. That means the action done by the agent reflects back upon the one that sent him. That's the concept of shlichus, the action done by the agent reflecting back on the one that sent him. So the Gemara continues. Ki asa shlichuso de balabayas, balabayas mi amoal. We saw in that source that if the agent fulfills the original wishes of the balabayas, the balabayas is viewed as the sinner. Am I? Why should the balabayas be viewed as the sinner? Did the balabayas use the money in the store? Did he go to the store and give the shopkeeper the cash? Amai, why should the balabayas be guilty? Nemo ein shlich l'dvar avera. We should say that the concept of shlichus does not apply when a sin is involved. And yet, we say that there is shlichus here. The action done by the agent reflects back on the balabayas. The Gemara responds, Shaini mi'ilo. Mi'ilo is different. Diyalfo chet chet mitruma. There's a word comparison found in the Psukim, and Rashi quotes the Psukim. You can see we have words highlighted in Rashi to make it easy for you to find where these Psukim are quoted. The word chet appears in these two contexts, in mi'ilo and in truma. Ma truma mashvi shaliach. Just like in the realm of truma, there is agency for its separation, for tithing produce. An agent can be employed. Af mi'ilah mashvi shliach. So too, the realm of mi'ilah generates the effectiveness of a shliach. Question, v'neilach mina. Why not learn from mi'ilah? To all cases where there's sin involved, and the sin was, we'll say, performed by an agent at the request of someone who sent him, that the sender is held responsible. The Gemara says, no, I'm not going to learn from Mi'ila. Mishum davi Mi'ila ushlichus yad shnei ksuvim aboyim gechad. There are two terms that we just saw. Mi'ila we're kind of familiar with. Shlichus yad is a new concept. We'll have to see what that is. But in these two areas of law, we find shlichus l'dvar avera. And being that shlichus l'dvar avera is illustrated twice, they therefore cannot serve as a precedent. As we said before, if the Torah intends for something to serve as a precedent, it would be enough to state the idea once. By saying it twice, the Torah is trying to tell me, yes, it applies here, but nowhere else. Mi'ilah ha'damar. And we already explained, we gave you an example of the case of shlich dvar avera by mi'ilah. Shlichus yad ma'hi. What is meant by shlichus yad? Shlichus yad is a phenomenon applicable to a person entrusted with an item. A person who is called a shomer. Shomer is someone who's given something to guard, to watch, to protect. As such, you are not, you the guard, are not allowed to use the item. You're allowed to move the item around if it's for the preservation of, or the benefit of the item. If you receive something to watch and you notice that the sun is beating down on it, it'll dry out the item or ruin it. So you can move it to another place. But outside of that, if it's not for the benefit of the item you receive, you're not to move it, and certainly not to use it for your personal gain. Doing so as a shomer, you're in violation of shlichus yad v'pikadon. The result of being shliach being shalech yad v'pikadon would be, if you, let us say, were appointed, there are different kinds of shomrim. The Gemara and the Shnayas and Bava Metzia elaborate on this. There's something called a shomer chinom, a shomer socher, a socher, a shoel. If you are a shomer chinom, you are agreed to watch something at no pay. You're watching it gratis. So as such, your level of obligation, if something goes wrong, is quite minimal. If the item is stolen or is lost, you're not responsible for it. A shomer chinom is responsible only for pshia being negligence. But if you did not act in negligence and something does happen, you're not held responsible. If you, as a shomer chinom, are sholeach yad b'pikadon, you were given something to watch and you then use the item for your own personal benefit, if something happens now, you are highly responsible. You're responsible even for things that you were previously not held accountable for. You're held accountable for anything that happens to it. Even for onsim. Onsim or ones, even something that was beyond your control. You're held completely responsible. That's by way of background. Now the Gemara. Shlichus Yad Mahi, what's the case of Shlichus Yad? What's the source for this? That in the case of Shlichus Yad, the Mishaleach is held responsible. What's the source? Tesanya. There is a Pasuk that says, and Rashi points out that the Pasuk that we're going to read now follows the Torah speaking about Shlichus Yad, where it says, Im lo sholach yodo, so following the pasuk of Shlichus Yad, the Torah says, Al kol dvar pesha beishamai omrim. From this pasuk we learn, L'chayev al ha-machshova kemais. If you're a shomer and you think or instruct, or I should not instruct, but you think or speak, articulate the thought of using an item you were given to watch, by merely thinking that, Rashi says, oh, al hadibur, certainly if you spoke it out, that you're planning to use this item that you were given to watch, you become chayev. That's, you become obligated, even though you didn't actually use it. A person, a shomer, is not held responsible until he actually uses it. Shenemar, imlo sholach yodol, and v'chulei. Omru beishamai lebeis hillel. V'halo nemar, does it not say, I'll call devar pesha? Devar is a reference to dibor, speech. In other words, not actual use of it, but even thinking to use it, you would be held accountable. Omru lohem beis hillel lebeis shamai. The Torah doesn't hold you accountable to you proactively, physically use it. Omru b'shamayi l'beisilo. Im kain, I'll call devar pesha l'omali. So what's the role of that pasuk? which I had used for the issue of Machshava. What do you say about it? Answer: Shiyachol ein li yela hu. Had I not had the pasuk of Al Kol Dvar Pesha, I would have thought only the shomer himself that was given the item to watch would be chayev if he himself is sholeach yad. Amar li avdo lishlucho minayin. What would be if the shomer told his servant or an agent, you go use the item, that the original shomer, the original guard, is going to be held responsible if anything happens? Talmud Lomar, Al Kol Dvar Pesha. Well, we see from here, Shlichus Ledvar Beira. Mr. A was given something to watch. He tells Mr. B, you see the thing there sitting in the corner that I'm supposed to watch? You want to use it? Go ahead and use it. And Mr. B uses it and something happens, it gets ruined. Mr. A, the shomer, is chayev. Mr. A told Mr. B to sin. Mr. B sinned by using the item, and the sin reflects back on Mr. A, the shomer, who has to compensate for any damage that results. So now, Shlichus Yad, I think we've illustrated, is a second example of Shliach Lidvar Avera. That within Shlichus Yad, you can have a Shliach doing something and his action, his sinful action, reflects back on the one that sent him to do it. So we have two cases of Shliach Lidvar Avera, Mi'ila and Shlichus Yad. Do we say in general Shliach Lidvar Avera? No. In general, we say Ein Shliach Lidvar Avera. Ha'nicha lebeis Hillel. This idea that Ein Shliach Lidvar Avera works out well according to Beis Hillel, because you have Shnei Ksuvim Haboyim Ke'echad. You have Me'ila and Shlichus Yad B'Pikadon. Elo lebeis Shammai t'muk milei lahai k'ro b'machshav k'maisa. But according to Beis Shammai, that use the pasuk dealing with the Shomrim to the pasuk of Al Kol Dvar Pesha, not to teach me about Shlichus Yad, but rather Machshava Kemaisa. It's all focusing on the Shomer himself. Even the Shomer's thoughts to use the item make him accountable. So how many Psukim, according to Beis Shammai, teach me about Shlichus Lidvar Avera, that could be? One! The pasuk by Me'ila, the topic of Me'ila. So the Gemara continues at the top of Daf Mem Gimel. Nelef Minei, let me learn according to Beis Shammai from Me'ila that there is Shliach Lidvar Avera. If you remember, the man with the money didn't realize it was holy funds. He asked someone to buy him a choluk. The agent buys the choluk. The man with the money on the windowsill, he is chayev, even though he wasn't in the store. So why doesn't Beis Shammai say in general Yesh Shliach Lidvar Avera? Mishum Dahave Me'ila Tvicho Mechiro Shnei Ksuvim Aboyim Ke'echad. Fachol Shnei Ksuvim Aboyim Ke'echad Ein Melamdin. Beis Shammai also has Shnei Ksuvim Aboyim Ke'echad regarding Shliach Lidvar Avera. One is Me'ila, the topic we've already mentioned. The second topic has to do with, it's called here Tvicho Mechira. So what's Tvicho Mechira? The Gemara on the fourth line from the top will say Tvicho Mechira Maihi. But we'll just give some background to it before we get to that. A person who commits a theft in a surreptitious fashion, it's called a ganav. When he's caught, he has to pay twice the value of the item he stole. That's called kefel. In the event that he not only stole the item, but if it's an animal, he slaughtered the item, he did a kosher shechita to the item, he has to pay not twice the value, but four times the value, sometimes five times the value. Another example, someone stole an item and he sold it. That thief will have to pay also four times the value of what he stole. Why? Because he stole it and sold it. So the case of Tvicha Mechira represents, and we haven't explained this element yet, but it represents a case where there is shliach l'dvar avera. Therefore, me'ila plus tvichel mechira represents shneksum ge'echad v'chol shneksum avoyim ge'echad ein malamdin. Me'ila ha'da moron. Me'ila, we already said what that was. Tvichel mechira mahi. In the case of the thief and his slaughtering or selling it, slaughtering or selling it, where do you see shliach l'dvar avera? What's the connection? Omar Kro, the pasuk says, "Utvachai oy mechoroi." On the side we have the pasuk quoted, Shmos Perchafala pasuk Lamed Zayin. If you read the pasuk on the side, it says, "Ki ignov ish." Shor oseh, if a person steals an ox or a sheep, utvachoi oy mechoro, he either slaughters it, the thief slaughters it, or the thief sells it, and he's caught. Chamisha bokor yishalem tachas ashor. If you're dealing with an ox, a very large animal, you'll pay five times the value. V'arbutzoin tachas aseh, and if it was a smaller animal that the thief had to carry out on his own, he had to trouble himself, strain himself, he pays only four times the value. Where do you see shlichus over here? The Gemara goes on to explain. Ma mechira al yadei acher. I hope everyone sees us. We're on the fifth line from the top of Daf Mem Gimel. Just like mechira, a sale al yadei acher. In order for a sale to take place, you need two parties. You need someone else. The thief sells it to someone else. That's someone else is the buyer. He's the acher. So we say from there, af tevicha al yadei acher. When we speak about the thief having stolen something and then slaughtering it, and then obligated to pay four times the value, that's not only if the thief himself does the slaughtering, even if he asks someone else to do the slaughtering. Now, it's clear that the slaughtering of a stolen item is a dvar avera. It's a sinful thing. You're not. It's a stolen item. Should be returned to the owner. What is this guy coming and slaughtering a stolen item? So that's a sinful act. When the hired Shoichet, the hired slaughterer, slaughters the animal, who pays? Not the Shoichet, not the Toveach, the thief pays. So the action of the hired slaughterer reflects back on the thief. So there again you have an example of agency. Mr. B does the action and Mr. A has to pay for it. So Beis Shammai is on solid ground right now that ain shliach l'dvar avera for the rest of the Torah, because only in two cases you see shliach l'dvar avera, by me'ila and by tevicha. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana. Now we didn't note, but we have we have a series marking a double underlined scheme and numbers or aleph, beis, and gimel. These are three sources, three opinions for how you learn that the toveach action, the action done by the slaughterer, reflects back on the thief, that the thief has to pay. How do I know the thief has to pay? So first approach was the hekish, the comparison between tvicha and mechira. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, oi. In the pasuk we read, it said shor o se. The word oi l'rabois es ashaliyah comes to include the case of an agent, the agent making the original offender chayav, the thief having to pay as a result of the agent's slaughtering. The thief has to pay. And the third approach, to Bechiskia Tona Tachas, in that word, in the pasuk we read, we saw Omechorosh Chamisha Boker Tachas Ishalim Tachas Ashor. That word tachas is l'rabois es hashaliach, to include the case of shlichus as being mechayev, as creating culpability on the part of the one that sent him. So do we say regarding the rest of the Torah, shlich dvar vero? No. Regarding the rest of the Torah, ain't shlich dvar vero. Well, ha nicha lemandam or shleik suma, boyin kevah imalamdin. That's very good according to the opinion that says when you have two psukim coming to tell me the same idea, they cannot serve as a precedent. So we have two psukim, we have me'ila, we have tvicha mechira, telling me shlich dvar vero there, but nowhere else. Elo lemandamar, malamdin, ma'iko lememar. There is an opinion that says that even if two psukim are coming to tell me the same thing, they can nevertheless serve as a precedent for the rest of the Torah. So let me learn from Me'ilah and Tzvicha Lechira. The rest of the Torah also, Yesh Shliach L'Dvar Vera. That if Mr. A asks Mr. B to commit a sin, Mr. A is going to be held responsible. The Gemara responds and says, even according to the Mad Omar, Shnei Ksuvim Vayim Kechad, we're not going to say regarding Shliach L'Dvar Vera that it applies to the rest of the Torah. Goli Rachmona B'Shchut Echutz. The Torah reveals in the Pasuk that deals with the prohibition of slaughtering. Chutz means outside the Beis HaMikdash. The Torah says, Dam Yechoshev Lo Ish Hahu Dam Shofach. Hu Velo Shlucho. If I own, Mr. A owns a sacrifice, and Mr. A slaughters the sacrifice outside the Beis HaMikdash, so he is guilty of Shchut Echutz. If Mr. A has a sacrifice and he asks Mr. B, take the sacrifice and slaughter it, or he says, take the animal and take the sacrifice and slaughter it outside the Beis HaMikdash. Well, a sacrifice was slaughtered outside the Beis HaMikdash. Who's Chayev? Only the one that does it. Not Shlucho. What does that mean, not Shlucho? That means that if someone else slaughtered the sacrifice, it's not going to reflect back on the original owner of the sacrifice. So in the realm of Shchut Echutz, we have a clear Gzeres HaKosov that the action done by an agent will not reflect back on the one that told him to do so. Ashkechon gabi Shchut Echutz. So there's a pasuk regarding Shchut Echutz. B'chol HaTorah Minolon. Regarding the rest of the Torah, where do we know this idea of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera? The Yalef Mishchut Echutz. We learn from Shchut Echutz. It is the precedent setter. Question, Adi Yalef Mishchut Echutz Neilef Mehanoch? Instead of learning from Shchut Echutz that Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera, why not learn from Me'ilah and Tvicha Mechira? After all, we're working within the Man D'Omar, within the opinion that says Shnei Ksuvim Haboyim Kechad Malandin. So why not learn from those cases that Yesh Shliach L'Dvar Avera? The Gemara answers, Hodar Kosav Rachmona V'Nichras Ho'ish Hahu. There in the case of Shchut Echutz, you see the word Hahu appears a second time. Imeino Inyan L'Gufo, if it's not necessary for the topic of Shchut Echutz itself, Teneu Inyan L'Chol HaTorah Kula. Let it apply to all other areas of the Torah, telling me, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. So, the repeat of the word Hahu teaches me, according to the opinion that Shnei Ksuvim Haboyim Kechad Malamdin, nevertheless regarding Shliach L'Dvar Avera, Ein Malamdin, or I should say, regarding applying Shliach L'Dvar Avera to the rest of the Torah, that we will not be able to do. Why? Because you have the double Hahu. Ulamad Yomar Shneksu Aboyim Kechad Ein Malamdin, according to the other opinion, the first of the opinions that we saw, that when you have two psukim coming to tell me the same thing, they do not serve as a precedent. And the Torah is trying to tell me that only there, in those two topics, you'll have shliach l'dvar avera and not in the rest of the Torah. Hani hahu hahu mai dorish b'hu. What will that opinion do with the double hahu that we saw by shchut echutz? Answer: Chad limuti shnayim shoyichsim besachim v'shochtin. One ahu comes to exempt a case where two people are holding the slaughtering knife while slaughtering a sacrifice outside the Beis HaMikdash. The Torah is saying, if it's done by Ahu by one person, so then there is the violation of Shulte Chutz. If it's done by two people simultaneously, two people are slaughtering one animal, one korban outside the Beis HaMikdash, so they're not guilty of violating the sin of Shulte Chutz. V'chad, the second hahu, hu v'lo onus, hu v'lo shogeg, hu v'lo mute. It tells me that one is in violation only if he's of sound mind, and not onus, not forced, not hu v'lo shogeg, not someone who is unaware, and not someone who is mute, who is mistaken. V'idoch, the opinion that said Shnei Ksuvim Aboim Kechon Melamdin, and the double ahu was to tell me Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera, where does he learn these last two halachas that we've numbered one and two? Answer: Mehu Hahu. The hey in each word tells me that. We had the word Hahu twice, so there's an extra hey, so to speak, attached to each who, serving as the sources for those two halachas. The idach hu hahu lo dorash, the opinion that said shnei ksuvim boyin ke'echo ein malamdin, does not see any significance in the added haze. On the side of the Gemara, we have a subtopic heading, and it reads, we have, it's called the tat nosei, ha'omer l'shlucho tsei haroiges hanefesh. Someone, it's a contract killing. You hire someone or you tell someone, go and kill so and so. V'ha detani ha'omer l'shlucho tsei harog es hanefesh. You ask someone, go kill so and so. Hu chaya v'shochav poter. The one that ordered the killing, he's held responsible. I'm sorry, correction. The one that did the killing is responsible. Sholchav, the one that hired the murderer, he's exempt. Sholchav, the one that sent the murderer, is exempt. Shammai hazokein omer, the famous Tana Shammai, it's called Shammai the Elder, not to confuse this with Beis Shammai, his students, those that followed in his path, but Shammai hazokein, the original Shammai, Omer, he says, Mishum Chagai Anovi, he has a tradition from the prophet Chagai. Sholchov Chayov, the ones that sent him are guilty. Shenemar, this is a pasuk that was stated to King David when Uriah was killed by Bnei Amon. Now, we're not going to recount the entire story from the book of Samuel, from Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Beis. We do recommend learning the portion in the prophets itself, so you get a fuller picture. But this event involved Dovan HaMelech and his eventual marriage to Bas Sheva, a woman that had been married to Uriah. David HaMelech ordered or sent Uriah out into the battlefield, and he was killed in battle against the Ammonites. And David was told, you killed him through the Ammonites. So David didn't pull the trigger. He didn't shoot the arrow that killed Uriah, and yet David HaMelech is considered the guilty party. The Gemara continues. My taime the Shammai Hazokain. Why does Shammai Hazokain come to that conclusion that the Sholchav, the ones that sent, in the case of a contract killing, the ones that hire the murderers are guilty? So Kosovar, first of all, Shnei Ksuvim Aboim Keachod Melamdin. Two psukim that come together to tell me the same thing we had before, the case of Shliach Lidvar Avera, they can serve as a precedent for the rest of the Torah. Fuhu Hahu Lo Dorish. And the haze that we saw above, that were darshaned to, let's say, to exclude the case of Shliach Lidvar Avera for the rest of the Torah, well, Shammai doesn't accept that. He doesn't see any significance in the haze. And that being the case, so there's no, we'll say there's no restriction on applying that which we see by King David to the rest of the Torah, that yesh shliach lidvar avera, and if you have someone that hired someone to commit a murder, the original one that did the hiring, he is chayav. V'boy esema, another approach, le'olam dorish, that Shammai Hazokain in general will darshan the haze. And if you darshan the haze, if you place a premium on the haze as teaching me something, the result will be like we said above, that ein shliach lidvar avera. Umay chayov. So then, what did Shammai Hazokain mean when he said Sholchav Chayav, the ones that sent him, are held responsible? Chayav Bedine Shomayim. They're held responsible in the heavenly court. If A asks B to commit a murder and B does the murder, so A is not looked upon favorably in the eyes of heaven. Alright, so that the Chayav that Shammai Hazokain was referring to in the source was chayev in the eyes of heaven. What about the Tanakama? He said exempt. All the Tanakama sover afilu midine shemayim nami poter. Are you suggesting then, in the eyes, according to the first opinion, that in the eyes of heaven, even in the eyes of heaven, he's exempt? Yeah, what do you mean he's exempt? The man did something. He requested something horrendous. He. Mr. A asked Mr. B to carry out a murder. What, do you think that heaven would look favorably upon Mr. A? Of course not. So it's obvious that the Tanakama also says Chayov Bedine Shomayim. So then what's the difference between the Tanakama and Shammai Hazokain? Elo Dino Rabo Vedino Zuto Iko Binayu. The point of difference between them is that according to Shammai Hazokain, the Mishaleach, the sender in the case of the murder, is highly responsible. He's guilty of a severe punishment. The Tanakam would say that the sender is guilty, but not of a severe punishment. But either way, the punishment will be carried out by Shomayim. V'boy esema, another approach. In general, ein shliach l'dvar avera. So then, why would Shammai say Sholchav Chayav? Shiny Hosam, that case is different. The Goli Rachmona Oisoi Harakta Becherav B'nei Amon. There's a special pasuk in the case of, a contract killing, an ordered murder, that says that the one that sent him is held responsible. V'idach, the Tanakama that exempts the one that sent him, what does he do with that pasuk of Oysa Harakta Becherav B'nei Amon? So the Tanakama explains, Hare Lecha Kecherav B'nei Amon. It is unto you, David, King David, like the sword of the Ammonites. What does that mean? Ma Cherav B'nei Amon Ein Ato Nena Shalov. Just like for murders committed by the Ammonites, you are not responsible for Af Uriachiti I Ato Nena Shalov. So too, you are not going to be punished for the death of Uriah Hachiti. My taima, why Why not? Why is King David not held responsible for the death of Uriah? Is it not so? And once again, when you look at the verses, you see that King David sent Uriah out into a very dangerous battle situation. His death was, I would say, practically inevitable. So why is why is David exempt? Answer: Moreid b'malchus have. Uriah was guilty of a crime known as Moreid b'malchus, rebelling against the king. Now, rebelling against the king can manifest itself even through speech. The Ka'omar lay, Uriah reported in that episode, he reported to King David, and he said as follows. He reported back regarding the battle, and he said, Va'adoni Yoav v'chol avdei Adoni al p'nei hasodeh chonim. He said, now you have Uriah saying to the king, the supreme commander, he said, Uriah said, my master Yoav, and whatever else he said there. We're not here to translate the entire verse. We want to focus on this expression. When you're speaking to the king, your master is the king. You wouldn't refer to someone else as your master. By the fact that you're calling someone else your master in the presence of the king, that's tantamount to Moreid b'malchus. That is an act of rebellion. So the penalty of Moreid b'malchus is death. Hence, Uriah, by speaking the way he did, he brought upon himself the sentence of death. And David HaMelech sending him out to battle to and get killed is fine. He was deserving of death. The Gemara continues with a long point. Omar Rava, Imtim Salomar Sovar Shammai. If you are going to say that Shammai holds Shnei Ksuvim Boim Kechod Melamdin, Vehu Hahu Lo Dorish. Two verses that come to tell me the same thing can serve as a precedent. So that would, in the context of our sugi, that would mean you are Yesh Lichud Var Vera in general, and the Hu Hahu Lo Dorish, and the extra hay that we saw above as serving as a source possibly for holding Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera, but if you deny the significance of the hay, you're left with holding Yesh Shliach L'Dvar Avera. Moide Shammai will concede, though, that the Mishaleach is not going to be Chayav, the one that sends is not Chayav. B'yomer L'Shluch, when you say to your agent, A says to B, say, ba'oyul eso erva, ve'chol es achilev. A says to B, go and commit an act of prohibited intimacy. That's ba'oyul eso erva, an act of prohibited intimacy. Or, A says to B, go and eat chilev. Chilev is forbidden fats of an animal. Forbidden food. And Mr. B goes and does either he's boilas or erva, or he eats the chalev. Shehu chayav v'shochav poter. The one that did the act, we'll call him the agent, he himself is chayav, not the ones that sent him. Shelo motzinu b'chol ha-Torah kula. We don't find anywhere in the Torah, ze nehene v'zem is chayav, that B enjoys the forbidden pleasure, and the pleasure that B experienced should reflect back upon the one that sent him. So in a case like that, where it's as part of the commission of the sin is physical enjoyment, even Shammai will concede Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.